Dr. Sproul, when you think about it, radio has some peculiarities. I mean, today we're sitting in a room talking to people we can't even see, and we rarely get to meet our radio family in person.
You know, as much as I love radio, Lee, this is one of the things that is difficult for me. There is something special about looking into the faces of our friends and being able to meet them and talk to them, hear about how God is working in their lives. And those personal encounters take our relationship to a whole new level that simply can't be achieved at a distance by books or by radio or other media. And it's for that reason, one of the driving forces for our having conferences and teaching cruises and events like that, where we'll have the opportunity to be with our constituents. We're going to be having a special Caribbean study cruise this next February. Our ship will sail from Port Canaveral, Florida on February 22nd. And return the 1st of March, and we'll visit islands in the Caribbean, and every day we'll have a mix of leisure, relaxation, plus study. People will be free to enjoy all the luxuries of a Royal Caribbean cruise, while at the same time contemplating and discussing the deep theological teaching that we're concerned about.
And I know you're looking forward to meeting folks. So I've been on one of these cruises with you, and you thoroughly enjoy interacting with our students.
Oh, I really do. And I know my fellow teachers, Dr. Nichols and Dr. Sproul Jr., will also enjoy that experience. This is one of our most highly anticipated events that we have all year. And for those who go, there's an additional bonus. Anybody that registers for the Caribbean cruise will receive free complimentary admission to our National Conference of 2015. That conference takes place February 19th through the 21st, just before the cruise. So if people want to come to the conference and then block out the time, as soon as the conference is over, we'll get on the ship and go on this teaching cruise. But for this event, space is limited, so we'd ask people to contact us quickly, today if possible, to reserve their spot on the Royal Caribbean ship, the Freedom of the Seas. All reservations for this cruise can be made through our friends at Sovereign Cruises. Their number is 877-768-2784, extension 101. Or you can go to ligonier.org/events.
Every time a coin in the coffer rings, a soul from purgatory springs. That medieval jingle helped prompt the Protestant Reformation. We'll find out why today on Renewing Your Mind. What if the cash in your wallet could buy your loved ones a ticket to heaven after they died? Well, in the 16th century, certain Roman Catholic priests taught that you could pay a fee to rescue someone from purgatory. Today on Renewing Your Mind, Dr. R.C. Sproul describes how the selling of the indulgences to the poor distressed Martin Luther and provided the spark that ignited the Protestant Reformation. This lesson comes from a series called Justification by Faith Alone. Here's the founder and chairman of Ligonier Ministries, R.C. Sproul.
When we think of the Protestant Reformation and the role that was played by Martin Luther, most of us are at least aware of the historic significance of the so-called 95 Theses that Luther nailed to the church door at Wittenberg. Now, there's a lot of mythology that surrounds that and misunderstandings. In the first place, when Luther nailed these theses to the church door, he was not committing an act of vandalism. The church door in Wittenberg, in the university town there, was the place where routinely notices were posted for public observation. And frequently, the faculty from the university would meet informally at times for serious academic discussion on issues that were current in the day. And Luther, by tacking up the 95 Theses, had no intention whatsoever to create some kind of national and international controversy. He was not acting as a protestor or as a Protestant in this particular endeavor. In fact, he was careful in his draft of the 95 Theses to write them in Latin, which was the language of the academic world. And he was really inviting the faculty there to discuss some of the issues that were related to a controversy that was brewing there in Saxony. And that controversy had to do with the sale of indulgences. But before I get into a rehearsal of the indulgence controversy, just let me say that one of the ironies of history occurred, humanly speaking, by accident. We know there's no such thing as an accident ultimately, but from our perspective, what seems to be an accident, some of the students read the 95 Theses in Latin, and they were galvanized by the content of them. And without Luther's knowledge and without Luther's permission, these students took it upon themselves to make use of the most recent advance in modern technology, Mr. Gutenberg's movable type printing press. And the students went and translated the 95 Theses from Latin into German and then began to distribute them around the countryside. Now, they didn't have Federal Express in those days and all the rest, but one of the strangest phenomena in all of church history took place. Within 2 weeks, the 95 Theses were in every village and every hamlet in Germany. And now it was a national issue. Karl Barth once remarked about Luther's intentions with respect to the 95 Theses. He said, at that point in his life, Luther was like a blind man who was climbing a ladder in a bell tower, and his foot began to slip, and he was losing his balance, and his arms were flailing around, at least one arm was flailing around as the other clung to the ladder, trying to grab a hold of something to save him from falling and to give him stability, and his hand in the darkness grasped a rope. And when he pulled on the rope, the bell rang and woke up everybody in the town. That was Barth's analogy of what happened when Luther posted these 95 theses for the internal discussion of the faculty at Wittenberg. Well, what was it that provoked those theses? Well, as I mentioned a moment ago, it was the so-called indulgence controversy. Now, unless you're familiar with the inner workings of the Roman Catholic Communion, you may not have much of a grasp of what this was all about. But at this time in the 16th century, the church was engaged in a massive building program, the building of St. Peter's Basilica. And in order to build St. Peter's, an enormous amount of capital was needed, and the church simply had to raise money. Now, one of the ideas that came out of Rome for increasing the revenue of the church was a special papal indulgence that would be made available for people who made contributions to this building program. And so the Pope authorized the sale of papal indulgences for this particular purpose. But now let's be very careful at this point. To understand that, let's not think of it in terms of a crass money-making scheme like one might associate with modern televangelists or something. But the Roman Catholic Church had for centuries been deeply involved in their sacramental system, among which sacraments included the sacrament of penance. And I will take a whole lecture to look at that sacrament of penance, because really it was the hinge on which the whole Reformation turned. But in that sacrament of penance, when a person committed sin and went to the confessional and so on, when he went through all of those steps that were involved in the sacrament, the final step was to perform certain works of penance, which included not just saying so many Our Fathers or so many Hail Marys or making pilgrimages, but one of the things that a penitent could do in order to be restored to grace was to give alms. And the whole idea of almsgiving had a long history in the Christian community, going back to the first century, as a great Christian virtue, to give alms to the poor or to charity or to the church or whatever, unselfishly. But the church made it very clear that the only almsgiving that was any value to the soul of the person giving the alms was the almsgiving that was motivated by a truly contrite and humble heart. And when the Pope authorized the sale of indulgences for St. Peter, he made that abundantly clear, that this was not an endorsement of a crass sale of indulgences, but rather it was giving people who were genuinely repenting of their sins an opportunity to fulfill the terms of penance by giving alms, and on this occasion there would be a special benefit that would be derived from the giving of alms for the building of St. Peter, namely a papal indulgence. Well, what was a papal indulgence? Now, to understand that fully, you'd have to have a broad and deep understanding of the whole concept of the church and of ecclesiastical authority that is part of the historic church there. And we don't have time to go into all of the aspects of this, simply to say, however, that the Roman Catholic Church believes that in the New Testament, Christ gave what's called the power of the keys. You've heard the phrase, the keys of the kingdom? The power of the keys refers to Jesus' statement to his disciples, whatsoever sins you remit on earth shall be remitted in heaven, and whatsoever things you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. And Rome has understood that in the way that Christ has delegated authority for the forgiveness of sins, at least with respect to temporal guilt, to the church. And it was given primarily to Peter, whom Rome believes was the first pope and was the rock upon which Christ would build his church. And so sometimes this is called the keys of St. Peter, because the pope follows as Peter's successor from the original position of the apostles. And so the giving of indulgences, as understood by Rome, was the manifestation of the power of the keys, the power of the church to bind and loose, to forgive sins, to grant an indulgence. But at the same time, in order for that person to be forgiven of sin, the person had to receive some merit somehow. And the Roman Catholic Church had developed a concept called the treasury of merit. And the treasury of merit is a storehouse of merit that includes within it not only the merit of Christ, but also the merit of the apostles and the merit of the saints, those who have performed what's called supererogatory merit. Supererogatory merit is earned by those who do works of supererogation, not irrigation, like you water the fields, but erogation. It just means super works. The rank and file Christian, we are all called to perform works, but few of us ever perform super works. Super works are works that are above and beyond the call of duty. For example, those who willingly lay down their lives as martyrs, as human sacrifices for the cause of Christ, were said to have performed works of supererogation. Now, the whole idea is this. In order for a person to get into heaven and not have to go through an intermediate state of purgatory, but to move from this world to heaven directly, one has to have a sufficient supply of merit to do that. Now, a person can be a believer and so on, but dies with insufficient merit to get into heaven. Those people don't go to hell, they go to purgatory. And purgatory is an intermediate zone, if you will, and we get the word purge or purging from the same root. It is called the place of purging. where God is cleansing people who are not quite clean enough to enter into heaven. And a person may spend 2 weeks in purgatory, 2 years, or 60,000 years in purgatory until they get whatever merit they need to pass on to heaven. Now, where the indulgence comes from is here, that the saints who have merits that are supererogatory, these super works, there are some saints who have been so saintly, so virtuous, and so meritorious in their lives, people like St. Francis and so on, that they not only had enough merit to get themselves into heaven when they died, but they had excess merit or surplus merit, which excess merit is then deposited into the treasury of merits. And by the way, lest you think that this is something that was just one of those strange quirks of the 16th century church, I would ask you to read the most recent Roman Catholic catechism, where this whole system of the treasury of merits has been reaffirmed and restated in our day. But in any case, here you have this treasury of surplus merits, which merits can then be drawn upon by the church and transferred to somebody else's account. So when the Pope grants an indulgence, he takes merit out of the treasury of merits and applies it to somebody's account who needs it or who is deficient, which can then reduce their stay in purgatory and hasten their entrance into heaven. Does everybody understand that? Okay, so what happened was that throughout the whole empire, delegates were commissioned by the church to represent Rome in proclaiming and announcing this new special papal dispensation, this new indulgence thing. Now, what happened in Germany was a particular representative of the church who was unscrupulous gathered all kinds of attention because what he did in kind of a slick Madison Avenue way was that he was running around to the peasants convincing them that if they would give liberally and generously to this building program that they could automatically free their relatives from purgatory. And this man's name was William Tetzel. And Tetzel did not give the standard caveats and say, now you have to really be sincere and you have to really be penitent. He just was a huckster who was peddling the church's forgiveness and really in an outrageous way. The phrase that he used for his marketing slogan in German, if we translated it into English, would go something like this. Every time a coin in the coffer or in the kettle rings, a soul from purgatory springs. So that was the sales pitch that Tetzel was using. Now, fascinating to me is that in the early stages of this indulgence thing, Luther himself was very excited about the prospect of this new release of papal indulgences. And at one point, he commented that he was disappointed, in a certain sense, that his mother and father, whom he dearly loved, were still alive. Not that he wanted them to die, but he was sad that they were alive at this moment in history, because had they been dead, he could have secured their salvation for them by getting indulgences to get them out of purgatory into heaven. So Luther himself went and gave alms and purchased these indulgences in behalf of his grandparents. It's a strange quirk of history there. But as he did this, more and more reports were coming back of the unscrupulous tactics of William Tetzel. And so Luther wrote the 95 Theses not to attack indulgences, not to attack the penitential system, not to attack the Roman Catholic doctrine of justification, but to attack what he believed were gross and scandalous abuses. He, at this point, was still a loyal son of the church. And he was trying to stop this Tetzel fellow from casting a blemish on the church itself. However, in the midst of his study and treatment and preparation for this correction of abuse, Luther began to reevaluate the entire system of indulgences and was wondering how he could square this concept of merit with the doctrine of justification by faith he read in the New Testament. And he began to have serious doubts about the whole sacramental system that people were relying upon for their own salvation. I mean, Luther loved the sacraments, don't misunderstand me. But he was seeing abuses that he was deeply concerned about. And with his keen and acute theological mind, the more he analyzed the outward edges of the abuses, the more his mind began to penetrate from the edge more and more into the substance, into the very core of the doctrines that were part of this whole system, and the more alarmed he became about the practice and the theology that lay behind the very giving of indulgences. And of course, once the 95 Theses, which expressed some of his major concerns, got loose throughout the land, the matter escalated fast and hard and furious. And what often happens in theological controversy is that the two sides dig in and it gets deeper and deeper and deeper. But again, Luther was not trying to upset the church. He was honestly trying to purify the church from this abuse. And he begged to have the opportunity to discuss these matters, not only with his own faculty at the Augustinian University there in Wittenberg, but also with representatives from Rome herself. And that opportunity came, and we'll look at the results of those discussions in our next segment together, because that's where things really escalated into a controversy that would become so volatile that the whole church of the Middle Ages would be fragmented into thousands and thousands of pieces.
We're certainly at an exciting place in church history. That's the founder and chairman of Ligonier Ministries, Dr. R.C. Sproul. And you're listening to Renewing Your Mind. Stay right here because Dr. Sproul will return in just a moment. Today's lesson is titled, The Selling of Indulgences. It represents just one portion of a 15-part study following the life and teaching of Martin Luther as he discovered the wonder of God's grace and the freedom found in the gospel. The complete series is titled, Justification by Faith Alone, and you can request a copy on CD when you give a gift of any amount to Ligonier Ministries. Our toll-free number is 1-800-435-4343, and our web address is renewingyourmind.org. As you work your way through this series with Dr. Sproul, you'll come to a clearer understanding of Martin Luther's motivations for reform, and you'll gain insight into the present-day divide between the Roman Catholic and Protestant traditions. Lessons include After Darkness, Light, Luther's Discovery, The Carnal Christian, and Peace with God. With more than 5 hours of teaching, this series is like an abbreviated college course on the Protestant Reformation. Request your copy of the study, Justification by Faith Alone, by calling 1-800-435-4343 or by going online to renewingyourmind.org. Now, here's Dr. Sproul with today's Coram Deo Thought.
One of my concerns for the church today, and for the Christians who are alive now, is that for some reason, I don't know why, the church has seemed to have lost any interest in her own history. I had somebody say to me cynically not too long ago that they thought that the church was founded by Billy Graham. It was a facetious statement, saying that their only interest in church history is contemporary. And they don't realize that the Church of Christ has been on this planet for 2,000 years since Jesus, and for a lot longer than that when we realize that the Church has its roots all the way back in Eden. And there has been this wealth of history. And you've heard the statement that those who ignore history are doomed to repeat it. And though as Protestants we don't believe in the infallibility of church tradition, yet at the same time we have an enormous respect to the faith of our fathers. For those who have gone before us, for those who have struggled through all kinds of controversies, why do we have to have these same controversies in every generation? It seems like we don't learn from the past. And my hope in these lectures is that we will listen to the church of the past, not out of an interest in archaic history, but that we may be instructed for the life of the church today.
I'm Lee Webb. Thanks for remembering that this is a listener-supported program. If you'd like to express your support by mail, you can send your donation to Ligonier Ministries, Post Office Box 865-777, Orlando, Florida 32886. And join us again next weekend as we continue our study of Martin Luther and the doctrine of justification by faith alone here on Renewing Your Mind with R.C. Sproul.